It's Wednesday, January 5, 2011. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. Well, the Navy's now released its preliminary decision in terms of the scandal over the videos on the USS Enterprise, and it has led to the firing of Captain Owen Honors, the man who, as the previous executive officer of the ship, had produced the lewd and lurid videos as a way of communicating with his young 18- and 19-year-old sailors. The news has reverberated throughout the naval world, and there's a great deal of controversy here, both inside and outside of military ranks. But something has become very clear in this case. The Navy's response, now perhaps made more acute in the aftermath of its memory of the Tailhook scandal from a decade ago, has led to many to recognize that what happened in terms of these videos is simply outside the pale. In this case, Captain Honors produced videos that were intended to entertain, but were so sexually explicit that the mainstream media had to highly edit them, even to communicate with the public what the videos were all about. Captain Honors had made these videos, you'll remember, when he was the second in command of the Enterprise, that is, the executive officer. And one of the things we've learned in the midst of this news story is that these executive officers have the responsibility to communicate daily with naval crews, reminding them of responsibilities for everything from organization and safety rules to personal hygiene. Now, this particular executive officer, Captain Honors, sought to communicate with his young sailors in a way that he thought would entertain them. But he clearly crossed the line. One of the most interesting things to note in this big story is what it says about the necessity of character in leadership. The Navy said that the videos were clearly unacceptable. But what eventually got Captain Honors sacked was the fact that his behavior simply invalidated and subverted his ability to lead. Leadership is a matter of morality before it is anything else. And once these videos were made public, the moral basis of Captain Honor's leadership on the Enterprise clearly evaporated. But there's even more to this story. The Navy had to act in this case for legal reasons, if for none other. Perhaps the Navy acted out of a grave moral concern. Perhaps the Navy acted out of mere public relations concern. But the Navy had to act because of issues of sexual discrimination, of the kinds of charges of gender discrimination that indeed a captain of a naval vessel would have to enforce. In this case, he subverted his ability to do anything even close to that. These videos were made several years ago. They came to light only in recent days, and the controversy was swift and hot, and in this case, for one man's naval career, quite deadly. It's a warning to every single leader, regardless of context. And speaking of leadership, Americans will note with interest that today marks the seating of the 112th Congress in Washington, D.C. The formalities will be fascinating, a part of the pageant of democracy. All members of the House of Representatives, both new and reelected, will be taking their oaths of office. Newly elected senators will be doing the same. The 112th Congress faces a daunting set of political expectations and challenges. But Gerald Seib, the always interesting columnist for the Wall Street Journal, points out that there's something of a generational shift taking place here as well, at least among Republicans. He writes, "Overall, the influx of 87 new Republican House members who will be sworn in Wednesday will lower the average age of House Republicans to 54.9 from 56.5 in the last Congress. By contrast," he writes, "Democrats in the House are moving in the opposite direction on the age scale. The 2010 election swept from office some of the party's younger members from moderate swing districts, and the result is a Democratic caucus that is both more liberal and grayer. The average age of a Democratic House member will rise to 60.2 from 58. Now, that's interesting in and of itself, but all of this should serve to remind us to pray. To pray for the 112th Congress as it begins its work, to pray for the many governors who are taking office in the respective states this week, to pray for legislators and persons at all level of government, from municipalities to the national government. Christians are commanded to pray for those in authority over us. One of the most important aspects of our prayer should be to pray that those who have such authority will wield it and will yield it in the right way, in such a way that they uphold righteousness, restrain evil, and do that which is best for human flourishing right in the sight of God. That's a big prayer agenda. That's greater than the political agenda of the 112th Congress. Another sign of our times is reported by Whitney Friedlander in the Los Angeles Times. She reports that openly gay characters on television are now reaching into the youth segment of entertainment. In particular, she reports that TV programs geared toward teens are going through the same process that went through adult sitcoms and dramas, and that is the inclusion of openly gay characters. The agenda in this is clear, as producers and the manufacturers of these entertainment products have indicated and acknowledged. One interesting comment in this news report came from Larry Gross of the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. He said, "Coming out stories are standard, almost a cliche of television stories dealing with gay characters, and this goes back to the 70s and the 80s. He went on to say, "What's probably different now is that the age is becoming younger, and I think this reflects the fact that the sort of battleground for gay people in society includes high school and probably even includes middle school. It's moved younger in the past decade or so, I think in part because younger people are becoming more aware of their identities." End quote. Well, now you can count on Hollywood and the entertainment industry helping to raise all the issues about sexual identity for middle schoolers, high schoolers, and children of all ages. Australia is a long way away from the United States, and for that reason, many Americans seem unaware of what's going on in that island continent, where large parts of Queensland state are now experiencing flooding. As many as 200,000 people have been displaced. At least two persons have died as a direct result of the flooding. But something new has emerged out of this situation that probably will get the attention of Americans in an odd way. And that is that the floodwaters there in Queensland are not only known for now rising, but for the fact that they contain dangers that are not always expected in the situation of a flood. In this case, the danger of this flood is exacerbated by the fact that the floodwaters contain saltwater crocodiles. Not only that, but about 9 of the 10 of the most deadly venomous reptiles in the world are located in this Queensland state, and these snakes are trying to share the same reducing spots of dry land with human beings and with many animals. It's a cause for concern and reason to pray for our friends in Australia as they are facing this challenge, getting more interesting, evidently, by the day. We talked in earlier days about the vicious attack upon Christians in Alexandria in Egypt. Now, Brett Stevens, writing his column for the Wall Street Journal, points out that the root problem in Egypt is not just its Islamicism, but rather it is its anti-Semitism. Now, if you look at the Egyptian press, something very interesting emerges, and that is that the Egyptian press tends to blame a Jewish conspiracy for just about everything that happens in the nation. Mr. Stevens writes, "When the only diagnosis Egyptians can offer for their various predicaments, ranging from sectarian terrorism to a recent spate of freak shark attacks at a Sinai beach resort, is that it's all a Zionist plot, you know that the country is in very deep trouble." Well, indeed. The country is in very deep trouble. Its troubles are becoming compounded by the imminent end of the Mubarak regime. But anti-Semitism, many people do not recognize, is now deeply ingrained in much of the world, even in a nation that is officially at peace with Israel, like the nation of Egypt. Old hatreds take a long time to die, and new forms of these hatreds become virulent and viral very quickly. We'll be watching this story with interest. Many people were watching the recent Consumer Electronics Show to see of future trends in technology and what exactly we should expect. Well, this much is becoming clear. 2011 is likely to be the year of the tablet computer. The Apple iPad, which was released just last year, has mainstreamed now the idea of tablet computers to the extent that virtually all consumer electronics manufacturers and certainly major computer firms are going to have to come out with some kind of competing tablet computer. But as news analysts and technology experts acknowledge, this is going to be a pretty tough thing. One of the issues that we see with the emergence of the iPad is that when a company comes out with a product that is so superior to expectations and it immediately catches the imagination of the people, it's actually very difficult for competing products to come along and be successful. This was certainly true in terms of Apple's previous release of the iPod MP3 music player, and now it appears that the iPad is going to continue the similar form of dominance. If there is going to be a competing product that's going to be a category changer, it's going to have to shift the terms of debate and offer a product that is remarkably and visibly superior to that of Apple. Or it's going to have to offer a quality product that can compete with Apple just in terms of price. There are a lot of lessons to be learned from this, lessons for churches and nonprofit organizations as well as for business. But on the issue of technology, This is a signal of what's going on in terms of our fast-paced world. We are now faced with technological innovations that come so quickly and take hold of the imagination with such speed that we find ourselves now almost, well, unable to know how we would function without these new technologies. As the late French philosopher and theologian Jacques Ellul pointed out, technologies have their own imperatives, and the effects of technologies are often very hard to discern when they are released and first become used. What's going to happen with the advent and now widespread use of the tablet computer? Well, we really don't know yet. But one thing is certain, the sales of laptops are falling, and the expectations of smartphones are rising. It'll be interesting to see what happens after all of this. But David Pogue, writing in the New York Times, raises a very different issue. And that is the fact that electronics, especially consumer electronics, the digital electronics that we use day by day, things like iPads, iPods, smartphones, and all the rest, are now operating on what is basically a 2-year obsolescence cycle, which is to say, very few of us are using the same phone, and even many of the same digital devices beyond phones that we used 2 years ago. This planned obsolescence is on a speed and structure far faster than, for instance, the famed and fabled planned obsolescence of automobiles and major appliances back in the 1950s and the 60s. It says something about the pace of technology. It also says something about our thirst to have the latest and the greatest technology available. There could be worse things for an economy, but when it comes to what effects technologies have upon human beings, this pace of 2-year obsolescence is likely to have effects on human experience that are not just economic. I published 2 major articles at albertmiller.com this morning. One is entitled, No Buzzing Little Fly, Why the Creation-Evolution Debate is So Important. In this, I respond to a recent article that came from Dr. Daryl Falk of biologos.com. I deal with why it is that evangelical Christians are indeed so resistant to adopting the theory of evolution and why it matters so much. The second article is entitled The Deadly Logic of Anti-Blasphemy Laws. Many Christians, when they hear of international calls for anti-blasphemy laws, think that they might be a good thing. I point out from Scripture and from Christian logic why it is not so. You'll find these articles and a host of other materials at my website at albertmiller.com. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Albert Mohler. For more information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information about Boyce College, go to boycecollege.com. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.